Sleep is essential and critical to the well-being of the human body and mind. Everyone craves it, especially when it's lacking, knowing how terribly it can weaken us by its absence. But what happens when sleep, when it does come, betrays the body and deceives the mind? For people prone to sleepwalking, slumber is not necessarily the welcome respite it is for most. And the condition lies at the heart of a new mystery thriller by my guest today, Chris Bilgelian, whose novel The Sleepwalker debuts this week. Chris Bilgelian is the Vermont author of 19 books, many of which have landed squarely on the New York Times bestseller list. Chris, thanks for being with us.
Mitch, it's a pleasure to be back. And your introduction about sleep and sleepwalking was poetic and poignant and wonderful.
First of all, thank you. But let me tell you why I am so intrigued by this topic. And it's partly personal. I am fairly obsessed with the subject of sleep. I get up very early every morning. So sleep is a really big thing for me. Did you heavily research sleepwalking for this book, or is this something that you are yourself maybe too familiar with?
I was having lunch with the director of the Sleep Center at the UVM Hospital because I wanted to understand the physiology of dreams. What is the brain doing when we dream? He'd just come from a patient who was a sleepwalker, however, and our conversation rather naturally went there. And suddenly we were talking about people who sleep cook, sleep drive, sleep jog, sleep sex, sleep murder, and I was hooked. I knew that that was what I wanted to write about.
Amazing fodder for a great mystery novel. What did you learn about sleepwalking that's misunderstood perhaps or turns out to be a popular myth instead of reality?
Before I get to the myths and the realities, here's what sleepwalking is not: acting out a dream. Sleepwalking occurs in the earlier non-rapid eye movement cycles of sleep. Dreams tend to occur in the rapid eye movement, or REM, cycles of sleep. Here is what sleepwalking is. Imagine that the part of your brain that controls motor activity is wide awake, and the part of your brain that controls memory and judgment is sound asleep. Here is what really fascinated me: how common sleepwalking is. 10% of children sleepwalk, and nearly 4% of adults have gone sleepwalking at least once in the last 12 months. If you are battling depression, you're more likely to sleepwalk. If you have an obsessive compulsive disorder, you're more likely to sleepwalk. And there are very specific triggers: sleep deprivation, exhaustion, stress, alcohol. We've all heard stories about the sleep aid Ambien leading to sleepwalking, and there may even be a sleepwalking gene.
How dangerous is the condition?
Oh, it can be very dangerous. Absolutely. I remember when my wife and I and my daughter were in Rome way back in 2004, and our daughter was still a little girl. She was 10 years old. We were in this lovely boutique hotel. We were on the sixth floor, and it had a balcony. And about midnight, my wife and I woke up to find our daughter had sleepwalked out of her bed to the balcony. We brought her back to bed, and the next morning she had absolutely no recollection of this experience whatsoever, because like most sleepwalking experiences, the sleepwalker has almost complete or total amnesia, which is one of the ironies to researching this book. The sleepwalkers I interviewed were far less interesting than their spouses or their siblings.
Because they don't know what happened to them, but the spouses and siblings do. They can recount the story.
Precisely.
One more quick question about this, because I know you're not a sleep expert, but I'm fascinated by the topic. What about that suggestion that it's always very dangerous to wake up a sleepwalker while they are sleepwalking? Did you find out anything about that in your research?
I did. It's not dangerous to wake up a sleepwalker. Okay. They might be startled. The only reason why it can be dangerous is because they might be so unbelievably disoriented. But if you're dealing with a sleepwalker who is in some kind of peril because of their sleepwalking behavior, my recommendation is to wake them up. Again, not a sleep doctor. Don't play one on TV.
Right. The central figure of the novel, a woman named Annalie Ahlberg, she goes missing and is presumed dead due to her history of sleepwalking. That's put her in danger before, but as the story unravels, a detective starts looking into her disappearance. There are doubts as to whether she's dead or missing or something else. How do you go about creating a fully developed character that the reader is going to care about when she's not really taking part in the linear current timeline of the book?
You raise a great question from a stylistic perspective. I have no idea where my books are going when I begin them. I depend on my characters to take me by the hand and lead me through the dark of the story. So to create empathy for Anna Lee and to introduce her to readers, there are a lot of scenes where her daughter Liana is going through photo albums. There are a lot of scenes where Liana and her kid sister Paige are talking about their mom and sharing anecdotes, because you're onto something really important. For this book to work, you have to really care about this woman who is gone on page one of the book.
You're always one or two steps ahead. This is why I really enjoy your novels so much, because in what you just said, you don't really know where your books are going. I wanted to ask about the twist ending, because now I'm not all the way through this book, so don't tell me. Don't tell the readers who are going to check it out. So many of your books, though, have wonderful twist endings that kind of take the reader by surprise, and you go, oh, there's the reveal. You don't start out knowing that twist ending when you start writing a book like this?
John Irving has said you shouldn't write the first sentence of a book until you can write the last. And famously, Margaret Mitchell wrote the last sentence of Gone with the Wind before she began writing that particular novel. But if I subscribed to that maxim of writing, I think I might have written one book. Because most of my books, I really have no idea where they're going. I don't do outlines. I don't know the endings. And in The Sleepwalker, I began this book not even knowing why and how Anna Lee has disappeared. No idea what's happened to her. And I discover that in some ways at the same time that you do as the reader, little by little, step by step. And I take comfort writing this way by something E.L. Doctorow once said. Writing a novel is driving at night with the headlights on. You can only see 200 feet ahead of you, but you have the confidence that eventually you will get where you're going.
One of the things that's different to me about this novel as well is that the detective, Gavin Reichert, he's looking into Anna Lee's disappearance. Maybe not such a good guy. We don't know. That's rare in most mysteries. The reader is used to having the detective be the assumed hero of the story, or maybe the anti-hero, but the man or woman we expect to be on the right side of things. Did you set out to play with that convention in this particular book?
I did. I wanted Gavin to be morally ambiguous in the reader's view. And I did that because I think moral ambiguity in fiction is really interesting. Villains who are all villain, I think, are dramatically less interesting than villains with whom we have a certain degree of empathy for whatever the reason. Exhibit A, Hannibal Lecter. Now, Gavin is certainly not Hannibal Lecter.
No.
But I you're absolutely right. I was aware of that convention.
There are two very strong female protagonists in this book, in Anna Lee, of course, the missing woman, but her daughter, Liana, who really sort of takes the lead in trying to find out what's happened to her mother. Do you enjoy writing women characters? Do you think there should be more of them in mystery novels and these kinds of books?
Yes, I love writing about women, and I do think that the more women we can have in literature, as not merely women in jeopardy, is a very, very good thing. Though, in the interest of full disclosure, I do have to share with you something my daughter once said. My daughter is 23. She's a young actor in New York City. And when she read a rough draft of Close Your Eyes, Hold Hands, she said, "Dad, take this as a compliment because I mean it that way. But I think your sweet spot as a writer is seriously messed up young women." And she's right when you think of Laurel Esterbrook in The Double Binder, Emily Shepard in Close Your Eyes, Hold Hands, or Serafina Bettini in The Light in the Ruins, or all of the Armenian girls scarred by a genocide in The Sandcastle Girls. And I think you meet, in some ways, two more of them in The Sleepwalker. Liana does take the lead in exploring her mother's disappearance, and she is very strong. But as is clear, she's also scarred by her mother's loss, as is Paige, her 12-year-old sister. These are two young Vermont women who are deeply scarred by their mother's disappearance.
Chris Bajalian's new novel is called The Sleepwalker. He'll be reading from it Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock at Kontoris Auditorium in Burlington. And some of the proceeds from that event will benefit the Vermont Food Bank. You can find information about how to get tickets on our website, vpr.net. Chris Bajalian, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Mitch, I always love speaking with you. Thanks for having me on.